The material in today's presentation comes from Exodus chapter 26. And it's a passage of scripture that when you get to it, it's sort of like the genealogy literature that you read in some parts of the Bible. People get to it and they look at it and they say, "Wow, I'll never understand it." You sort of skip through it and then you go on to the next paragraph. And in this section, it's the next paragraph is probably just as complicated as the one that you were skipping over. This material is important because God repeats it twice, almost verbatim. It's in the early, in chapters 26, we're looking here at where God gives the original instructions to Moses. And then if you go further on down in Exodus, I think we're in Exodus. When you go further on down in Exodus, you'll see that it's repeated again as the workman did the work, and it's done exactly the way God gave. That's one of the reasons it's emphasized, exactly the way God gave it to Moses. They did it exactly that way, and that's emphasized again and again in the presentation. It should be done a specific way, and you might wonder why. This model, this material that was given to Moses for the making of the tabernacle is based upon something from heaven. God has a throne in heaven. There's a throne in the tabernacle. He has other things in heaven that we'll talk about next week that relate to the contents of the tabernacle. And so when we get to that, you'll see how it relates. Now, if we look at it just superficially, we may not realize what the importance of it is, but ultimately I think as we go through this and get a little bit saturated with it, we'll see some things that relate to what we're about. All right. Tabernacle, we talked about last week, is just the basic word for a dwelling place, and basically it's a tent that the Abraham and his descendants lived in tents like aliens in a strange land, and God is going to live in a tent in Israel to be among his people, but he's sort of tabernacling there. He's living in a temporary place. It's not the ultimate temple that God wants, and that's, of course, where we're going to go with the study. But let's look at this particular one. Especially as it's given here in Exodus 26. And when you read through this, there's several things that come up. How big is a cubit? The dimensions are given in cubits. And you can basically think of a cubit as a half a yard. It was in David's time. However, in Moses' time, it was a little bit bigger than that. We're not sure why. And if you're interested in the details of why a cubit is 20.6 inches instead of 18 inches, I can point you to a couple of scriptures. And we might just look at that to start with. In 2 can't think of the name of it. 1 and 2 Chronicles. I couldn't think of the word Chronicles this morning, so I have to, probably because I didn't have my glasses on. 2 Chronicles, chapter 3 and verse 3. And it talks about the fact that there was a standard for the cubit. And it has to do with the time that we'll look at in detail later on, where David and Solomon, particularly where Solomon is building the temple according to the pattern that was involved in the tabernacle. And he says, the foundation Solomon laid for the building, the temple of God, was 60 cubits long and 20 cubits wide, using the cubit of the old standard. How do you know how long a foot is? How do you know how long a meter is? How do you know how long an inch is? Well, there are standards, and in fact, in the past, there was an institution in the U.S. government of Bureau of Standards that kept the standard models for length and volume and a variety of things that we use every day, and they kept a standard for a foot, for example, and a standard for a yard. They had one made out of some sort of metal that didn't contract or expand much with changes in temperature, and that thing was kept physically. There was a meter in Paris that was kept in a vault somewhere so that we could refer back to it to know what the standard meter was, what the standard yard was, what the standard volume, a gallon, for example, or a liter. So those standards were kept, and apparently even the Israelites had a standard like that. The standards now are atomic standards, and of course it's based on some sort of a physical reaction. But in those days, there was a standard, and if you go to Ezekiel, the 40th chapter, you'll find an angel talking about rebuilding the temple after it was destroyed in the Babylonian captivity. He's talking about using a rod, which was so many cubits long, and he talked about the fact that the cubit that they were going to use was a cubit which was in use at the time of the rebuilding Zerubbabel, for example. It was in use then. It was 18 inches, roughly 18 inches. But he says the cubit we're going to use is a cubit plus a hand breadth, which is about 2.5 inches longer than the 18-inch cubit. And we'll talk about that from the standpoint of archaeology later on. But anyway, just take it from me that the cubit is about 20.5 inches long, and so we'll convert things into feet as we go along so that you can see how big it was. Well, let's read this. Make the tabernacle with 10 curtains. We're going to start talking about material today, and the ladies understand curtains. I think almost everybody, women put up curtains over the windows in the house, and so that's what we're talking about. 10 curtains of finely twisted linen and blue and purple and scarlet yarn with cherubim worked into them by a skilled craftsman. So we're talking about some material here. And all of the curtains are to be the same size, 28 cubits long and 4 cubits wide. Now, 4 cubits is about 7 feet. And so it's the width of it. It's in strips that are very long. 28 cubits is some 43 feet or something like that. So it's a very long piece of material, and it's 7 feet wide, a little wider than I can reach. And the reason for doing it in strips like that is you can't weave much bigger than that, can you? The loom upon which the weaving was done has a limit. And they were skilled in doing this. They had learned this, and as slaves in Egypt, they had made material, I'm sure, for the Egyptians. So there are going to be long strips of linen, and blue, purple, and scarlet. Scarlet is red, I think. And the blue and the purple is kind of a blend of blue and red, isn't it? That's how we make purple if you're mixing colors. And so those colors have a significance too. So they're join 5 of the curtains together and do the same with the other 5. So there are 10 curtains that are made like this. They're joined into 2 groups of 5 and 5. And make loops of blue material along the edge of the end curtain of one set and do the same the end curtain of the other set. Make 50 loops on one curtain and 50 on the end curtain of the other with the loops opposite each other. And ultimately, they're just going to fasten these loops together. But why make the curtains in 2 parts like this? And, of course, you have a huge piece of material when you join the 5 curtains together. And it's about all that anybody could carry. And that's the significance of the tabernacle. They're making a temple that they can quickly dismantle and quickly reassemble. And they can carry it from one place to another during the wilderness wanderings. And so it was important that it be portable. And it can be dismantled and reassembled. And so you can't make anything that you have to have a front-end loader to carry. It's got to be something that people can carry. They can put it on, maybe on an ox cart or a wagon and carry it. But it's got to be something they can pick up and quickly take apart. Think of Legos. You can make your kids make a little building out of Legos and realize that it comes apart into pieces that are very small. And that's what we're talking about here. So this five curtains joined together is about all that a person could lift. And so they're going to make gold clasps to hold the two halves together and fasten the curtains together so that the tabernacle is a unit. So this is part of the tent covering of the tabernacle. And so let's see what that looks like. Whoops. Why doesn't that? There we go. I just press it hard. So here are the curtains, and I presume that each curtain is a different color, and it has cherubim worked into it. Now, in the original computer program that I had, I put little symbols in there that are called dingbats. You know what a dingbat is? And they had looked like little things with wings on them, but when it got translated into something that Microsoft could handle, they came out just as C's and T's or something here. But anyway, that's supposed to be a cherubim. We don't really know what they looked like anyway. The cherubim were angelic creatures, but they had faces like animals. And so that's seen in the fourth chapter of Revelation, sixth chapter of Isaiah. And we'll talk about that some later on. So here's the two sets with loops. Now, I didn't have room for 50 loops in this. There's less than 50 in the diagram here. And we're going to join them together. And this is a particularly critical juncture in the tent. And you'll see why in a minute. So it's made out of multicolored curtains strung together like this and joined together with some sort of clasp. And so here's how the loops fit. They're opposite one another, one set and the other. And then you put a clasp over it like that. Those clasps are made out of gold. Now, there's a tent that goes on top of this that's going to have clasps made out of bronze. So there's a distinction between the two, and we'll see that in a minute. These gold clasps come up again later on in the assembly of the structure. So here's how the two halves are joined together like that with loops of blue, which is specified. I don't know why they had to be blue, but they did, and the clasps had to be gold. We don't know how the clasps worked. Were they like clothespins, or were they like safety pins, or were they just loops that threaded through the other loops? Somehow, it had to be something that could be made into a firm connection. Okay. So you pull the two together, and that's the covering, the inside covering for the tabernacle. And you can see what its dimensions are here. It's 48 feet up and down, and it's almost 70 feet long. So that's a big, 70 feet is pretty big. It's bigger, let's see, how big is this auditorium? 48 feet maybe. If you spread that thing out in here, it runs past the back end of the auditorium. It's a big tent. But it's not called a tent. This is the decorative part on the inside of the ceiling of the tabernacle, and it hangs over the sides of it. We'll see how that fits in a minute. All right. Now make curtains of goat hair. And later on in the construction of it, it says the women who were skilled at this sort of thing took the goat hair and made a yarn out of it, and then that was all woven together to make another material. This is the part that's going to be the tent. This is the actual structural curtain for the tent. It goes over the colored decorative curtains. Make curtains of goat hair for the tent over the tabernacle, 11 now instead of 10. Okay, that's a distinction. There's 11 of them this time. All 11 curtains are to be the same size, 30 cubits long and 4 cubits wide. You can make them on the same loom, you see, as you made the other curtains. 4 cubits is sort of a standard width for the loom. But they're 30 cubits instead of 28 cubits, so they're a little bit longer. They're going to hang over the ends of the other curtains. Join five of the curtains together in one set, six in the other set. Fold the sixth curtain double at the front of the tent so they can have a double thickness of the curtains over the front end of the tabernacle. And you'll see what that does to the seams in the whole system as we put it together in a minute. Fold the sixth curtain double at the front end of the tent. Make 50 loops along the edge of the end curtain in one set, and also the edge of the end curtain in the other set. And make 50 bronze clasps this time, and put them in loops to fasten the tent together as a unit. So here's, well, this thing isn't working. Someone have to change the, there we go. So here's the next tent that goes over the tabernacle. It's got six curtains on the right, five on the left, and it's joined with a seam of loops and clasps, just like before. And you can see how that fits over the colored curtain here. It hangs, it's a cubit longer at the top and the bottom, and it's two cubits on the left and the right. And at the arrow on the right, we're going to fold on the eastern side of the tabernacle. We're going to fold that curtain back on itself to make it half width but double thickness. Okay? Now see what that does? That puts the seams of the goat hair curtain in the middle of the curtains that are colored so that the seams don't coincide each time. That, of course, makes it stronger, doesn't it? You women who make clothing and that sort of thing will understand. And notice that the place where the clasps join together is also offset by two cubits, a half of a curtain width. And the whole thing is now a little bit bigger than it was before. I can't read that at the back, but anyway, it's some 51 cubits wide and 75 and a half cubits long. Okay, now let's superimpose that over the tabernacle structure itself, which we're going to make in the next section. And you can see that the seam where the colored curtains are joined together is exactly above where the curtain is going to be that separates the most holy place, the square on the left, from the holy place where the priests went on the right side. And later on he's going to specify that you hang that curtain from the clasps. And that's why you can do that, because that's how it fits together. Now you have the tabernacle is 10 cubits wide. That's from top to bottom. And then the pieces that hang down on the top side and the bottom side of it are also 10 cubits, including the goat hair tent. And at the back, you've got another 10 cubits of colored material plus two more cubits of the tent. And so there's a question about how you fasten all of that on the sides. I suspect that the colored curtains hung straight down and that the tent curtains were put out at an angle, and we'll show you a picture of that in a minute, and staked to stabilize the whole structure. Okay, but we got to make the rigid part of the thing, which is a pretty good sized building that's shaded in gray here. Now he says, as for the additional length of the tent curtains, that's the goat hair curtains, the half curtain is left over is to hang down at the rear of the tabernacle. The tent curtains will be a cubit longer on both sides. What is left will hang over the sides of the tabernacle so as to cover it and make the tent a covering of, make for the tent an additional covering of ram skins dyed red. So there's some skin material there from rams that's fastened together to make more of a covering, and over that a covering of the hides of sea cows, which probably makes the whole thing waterproof. And we aren't given any instructions about how big or how those are fastened together, other than there must be a standard way that they normally did that, and probably just about the same size as the goat hair curtain. All right. Now we got to make the vertical part, the wooden part of it. And so the women who've been doing all this sewing and embroidering and stuff can relax, and now the men are going to work on what's called the frames or the boards in different translations. Make upright frames of acacia wood for the tabernacle. That's something that they were to donate when they remember, as we finished last week's lesson, we talked about all these materials, and they're listed on your handout here. They were donating acacia wood. I don't know where they had gotten it, if they went out and collected it in the area or they brought it from Egypt. And it may be they had some wood that they brought with them that was partly processed. Each frame is to be 10 cubits long and a cubit and a half wide. So it's a different width from the curtains that have been covering it. But it's 10 cubits. 10 cubits is about 17 feet. That's a pretty good length of lumber. I don't know if any of you have ever worked in lumber, but most lumber that you buy in a lumber yard is what length? 8 feet. That's about all a person can really handle very well. We don't know how thick these frames were, but probably they're fairly thin, maybe an inch thick. But this is a pretty heavy piece of lumber to be 17 feet long, and a cubit and a half is going to be about, a little over 4.5 feet wide. No, excuse me, 30 inches. It's going to be a little less than a yard in width. I'm sorry. A cubit is 20.6 inches, and a cubit and a half is going to be about 31 inches. Make all the frames of the tabernacle in this way. They're all going to be exchangeable parts, I suppose. Make 20 frames for the south side of the tabernacle and make 40 silver bases to go under them. So they're going to, remember, this thing's going to have to be carted around and set up on the desert floor. And so they're making silver bases or foundations for each frame, two of them for each frame. And so there's going to be a peg in the bottom of each frame that goes into the base to make it a unit. And two projections set parallel to each other. And apparently those are at the bottom, as we'll see in a minute. Make all of the frames of the tabernacle this way. Make 20 frames for the south side, two bases for each frame, one under each projection. And for the other side, the north side of the tabernacle, see, the thing sits with the front of it to the east. The most holy place is in the west, and the sides of it are to the north and the south. So it faces the rising sun. Okay, for the other side, again, you make 20 frames and 40 silver bases. Make 6 frames for the far end, that is the west end of the tabernacle. You're not going to have any frames on the east end. You're just going to have a curtain there. Make 2 frames for the corners at the far end. So the corner frames have to be a little special so that they can fasten both to the sides and to the ends. And at these two corners, they must be doubled from the bottom all the way to the top and fitted with a single ring. Now, we haven't talked about rings, but rings come up in the next paragraph. Both shall be like that. So there shall be 8 frames and 16 silver bases with 2 under each frame. Now, here's a frame. And it's got gold rings attached to it along the length. And on the outside, there's going to be wooden poles that pass through those rings to fasten the whole thing together. And so this is a frame. It's covered with gold. And the rings that are attached to it are in gold. And there's actually going to be 5 of these cross pieces that hold the whole structure together. And I'll show you how that goes in a minute. Crossbars. Make crossbars of acacia wood, 5 for the frames on the one side of the tabernacle, 5 for those on the other side, 5 for the frames on the west at the far end of the tabernacle. The center crossbars to extend from end to end at the middle of the frames. And in fact, I think all of the crossbars ran from end to end, but the point here was that it should be in the middle. Overlay the frames with gold. Make gold rings to hold the crossbars. Also overlay the crossbars with gold. Set up the tabernacle according to the plan shown you in the mountain. And, of course, we read through that and we get to that one and we say, well, all of the little details that I don't understand, Moses was shown how to put it together. But when you see what you've got on your handout today, you see something of how you assemble all of these frames. And this is a picture of the side of it. The silver bases are at the bottom, you see. And there's two under each frame. And each frame is covered with gold. There's one of them there that I didn't get the gold plating on it just exactly right. This was made from a model that the Mennonites made in Pennsylvania and sell on the internet. And you can get their model. The gold rings are not part of their model. It's part of some jewelry pieces that you can buy at one of the craft shops. But anyway, you can see how the gold-covered crossbars run through those rings all the way from one end to the other, two toward the top, one in the middle, two toward the bottom. And that gives the whole structure quite a bit of strength and aligns all of the frames from top to bottom. And make a curtain of blue, purple, or scarlet yarn and finely twisted linen with cherubim worked into it. And well, that's the part that we are in the dark about how the cherubim looked. We know that they were engraved in the walls of the temple that Ezekiel describes in the 40th chapter of Ezekiel. And one of them, he says, had a face like a man, and the other had a face, I think it was a face like an eagle. And so they have faces probably facing to the right and to the left. And it's they have wings. They have legs like a calf. And we don't know about their feet necessarily. They were covered in some of the pictures Isaiah saw. He couldn't see what their feet looked like. Ezekiel said their feet were like a calf's feet, like they had hoofs. So don't know a whole lot about their strange creatures, and we don't know how to do that embroidery work now. Hang it. Now, notice it says cherubim worked into it by skilled craftsmen. Hang this curtain with gold hooks on four posts of acacia wood overlaid with gold, and standing on four silver bases, hang the curtain from the clasps. This is the curtain between the most holy place and the holy place. And that line of clasps joining the colored curtains was right at that point in the diagram that I showed you before. So the curtain is to be hung on gold hooks from these golden clasps. Place the Ark of the Testimony behind the curtain. The curtain is to separate the holy place from the most holy place. Okay, we'll take a look at a curtain. It's just a square curtain with red, purple, and blue material. And we aren't told how they're joined together, whether they were vertical or horizontal. However, Josephus does give a description of some of the parts of the temple in his works. He said the bottom part of the curtain was red and the top part was blue. And so the blending of the red and the blue to make purple may suggest that the red represented earth. Remember that Adam was made from red dirt. And the blue represents heaven. And so the purple is some sort of a blend between heaven and earth. Perhaps God coming to earth and rescuing us from the earth. But exactly how the symbolism worked. And C and T stand for embroidered embroidered cherubim. Okay. So you put clasps, you put hooks on the top end of that thing and hang it from the clasps that divided the most holy place from the holy place. Now, at the bottom, for the entrance of the tent, make a curtain of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and finely twisted linen, the work of an embroiderer. So it's similar to the curtain hanging between the two halves of the two rooms of the tabernacle. Make gold hooks for this curtain and five posts of acacia wood overlaid with gold, and cast the five bronze bases for them. So they're on bronze. The ones at the other are four poles or four posts, and standing on four silver bases there, you see, in the top paragraph there. So there's specific different materials used for different ones. And so when you put all of that together, and we just made these come straight across, that's the one hanging at the front with the five pillars. And at the back, and it's in the diagram you have in the handout, you can see the four posts and the curtain hanging there. Now, we don't have the overlying curtains and of the tent, so you can't see where the clasps were in a row there, but you can see how that fit together. This is the picture you have to take home. Sorry we couldn't do that in color, but you understand the expense of making 150 copies. Now, the tents put across it, and you'll notice in this one, this is the model that the Israelites built in Timnah, Israel, and it's taken off the internet. Let's see if I can notice that the colored part comes down on the sides to about this point and over here to about there. If you swing that down, it would just hit the ground right at the sides. And I'm not so sure but what the colored part covered the outside wall of the tabernacle. And the goat hair tent was stretched out and staked with some sort of stakes along its length. And, of course, it's covered both with red ram skins and then the sea cow hides. And we don't know exactly what that was, if it's a manatee or something like that, that the Egyptians killed for waterproof skins. So there you see in the model I gave you, these five posts are equally spread across the front. Here he has one in the middle and two at the side and two at the side. This structure right here is a place where a laver where the priests washed before they went inside. We'll talk about that next week because we're going to talk about the contents of this building now next week. And later on, in the week following, we'll talk about how they dismantled this and put it back together. It had to be portable. It had to be moved along as the Israelites moved from place to place. All right, so the materials. Let's talk for a minute about the materials involved in the tabernacle. Last week we spent some time talking about how they contributed all of this. They didn't tax the Israelites to get the materials for making the tabernacle, did they? And we mentioned how much participation do you suppose they had? They had people contributing even after they had enough. Remember that? And so the willing participants who brought stuff and gave from the heart the things that they wanted to contribute were the things that Moses accepted. And they weren't forced to give. And that was something mentioned this morning in our devotional before communion. So gold, silver, and bronze. They're carrying stuff like this. What form do you suppose it's in? Gold and silver particularly. How are the Israelites carrying stuff like that around? Well, it's mostly jewelry, isn't it? The decorative stuff and we've got 2 million people. And so you piece together some jewelry, earrings and rings and things like that. Brooches were mentioned there. You can get considerable amount of metal from those. And in fact, nowadays, if you take your extra gold to the traders and trade it in, what's gold worth today per ounce? Do you remember? How much is it? Yeah, that's over $1,000 an ounce. Can you imagine? That's valuable stuff, isn't it? And so it didn't used to be that. What was the standard value for gold in 1950? Does anybody remember that far back? $35 an ounce, wasn't that right? Something like that. And now it's more than 10 times that. And so it's valuable stuff. Well, they had brought some of these metals in small pieces. They weren't large chunks of it. If you had a bar of gold, have you ever watched this program on TV where they take you to the gold repository in Tennessee? What's it called? Fort Knox, that's right. You see those guys pick up a gold bar? How much does it weigh? It's very heavy. And you wonder about the parts of this tabernacle that are overlaid with gold. I suspect that's very thin. But there's one structure that's going to be solid gold, and we'll have to look at that next week. That's going to be heavy. Blue, purple, and scarlet yarn. And they brought that to make cloth or to put into cloth, and they had fine linen that they brought with them. I suppose they brought bed sheets. I don't know what kinds of materials they brought with them in their belongings as they came from Egypt. They were handed stuff by the Egyptians. Remember, God persuaded the Egyptians, gave them the tendency to just give the Israelites anything that they had. And so Egypt was really spoiled as the Israelites left. Goat hair, that doesn't sound too attractive, does it? But goat hair is, what about goat hair for making cloth? What do you suppose is the advantage of goat hair? Any ideas? It's probably pretty durable, isn't it? And they had goats that had some length to the hair. Why not use wool from sheep? A goat hair would be a little more straight, wouldn't it, and easier to handle in making. I think that's true in making a cloth, but it made a durable cloth, and that's going to be the main tent. Now, the ram skins dyed red. What's the significance of dyeing them red? I don't know. We aren't told, are we? Maybe the dye did something to the skin. I don't know just what that was all about. The hides of sea cows, that's apparently some animal that lived in the Red Sea or the Nile River. And they had those hides to use on their tents as a waterproofing. And then acacia wood. So these are the things that are listed for the building of the tabernacle. And we talked at the end of class last time about the fact that we are building a temple in our hearts. God wants to dwell in humanity, and he's going to dwell in the center of the Israelite camp. But that's not really what he wants to do. He wants to dwell within each individual Christian, doesn't he? And so where does he dwell? You yourself are a temple of God. And we talked about that verse last week. And so how do you build a temple within you that's suitable for God to dwell in? What kind of materials do you need to make your life habitable for the Holy Spirit? It's given to you when you become a Christian, right? We're all in understanding about that. Now, what kind of a temple can you build within yourself? And what are the materials out of which you'll make it? Well, we just spent 3 months talking about that in this class last quarter. What are they? What do we call them? The fruits of the Spirit. Faith, goodness, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness, and love. That list comes from 2 Peter, the first chapter, beginning in verse 5. How long does it take you to build this temple? A lifetime, doesn't it? It's going to get better. You start out, God may be sleeping on the floor to start with if you don't have much of a temple for him. But he wants to dwell inside you, in your heart, in your mind. And so faith is where you start, and you had to have faith in order to do what? To start, didn't you? How did faith help you in becoming a Christian? Can I get a little bit of participation here from somebody? Yeah, you faith is a prerequisite, isn't it? You don't become a Christian because someone dunks you at the point of a sword. You want to do that, and you believe God, and you accept what God has said, and you start out with the idea of doing what God asks you to do. And so, goodness, knowledge. How long does it take you to accumulate enough knowledge to build a suitable temple? That you're going to work on for a long time, aren't you? You learn more and more the older that you get. And self-control, that becomes a tough one for many people, and it's something that develops as you go along, and that's part of what you've got to add to your temple, perseverance. And finally, you get to things like godliness. Then it's something God is pleased to dwell in, I think. If your temple contains, what is godliness anyway? That's kind of a contraction of three words, or three phrases, what are three syllables, I guess. What are they? Godlikeness. If you become like God, then He is compatible with your spirit and can dwell in you easily. And that promotes that. And brotherly kindness is an attribute of God, an attribute of God that helps you to relate to other Christians, isn't it? And so, and finally, although hopefully not, hopefully it permeates all of your construction of this temple, is love. Okay? Any comments about that? That's really where we're going with this. We're going to talk about it because of some of the mistakes that the Israelites made in handling the temple and the tabernacle. It wasn't easy. And they did some things that they shouldn't have done with it. And we can learn from that as well because we have to take care. Here Jesus talked about an evil spirit dwelling in a man, and he's cast out, and they sweep the place clean. That happens at the point when you become a Christian, but to keep the evil spirits from coming back, you've got to get started on your construction, don't you? You've got to work on building a suitable habitat for God within you. So we'll talk more about that as we go along. Any questions about this that come to mind? We got a minute or two. Yes.
The instructions that are given to Moses are so detailed.
Yeah.
But even the most detailed written instruction, we still don't know a lot of this, exactly how it worked. Was Moses given visions of this guy?
I think God showed him in the mountain what it looked like. He had a picture or a diagram or something that gave him just a little more, so he saw the overall plan. Now, he knew what a cherubim looked like. I think that's kind of interesting that a cherub looked like. Cherubim is the plural. He knew what a cherub looked like, and the ancients knew that. We don't know that today because we don't have any. We have some pictures of things that the Egyptians were gods to the Egyptians. I think some of the concepts of the ancients about cherubim came from the time of Noah, because before the flood, the cherubim were on the earth. They were guarding the gates of Eden, for example. And men may have known, and it's been one of my thoughts, was that the Egyptian gods, which were based on animal forms with animal heads on human forms, came basically from those ideas. But we only have a little bit of sketchy description in the Bible, and so we don't know how to draw that picture now. We can guess.
Can you imagine the difference between a CAD and a GAD, a God-assisted diagram? God
could have given him a three-dimensional view of it, couldn't he? And here's how it's supposed to look. And that's emphasized even by Paul, if Paul wrote Hebrews, that it had to be assembled according to the pattern shown Moses in the mount. And so there's a significance to all of this, and we're going to try to make some more significance out of it as we go along. Well, thank you. You seem to, I hope all of you understand how this thing was put together. And in a couple of weeks, we'll look at them taking it apart and putting it back together. And it's interesting how